If we can go out to the North Sea and get gas and bring it right across the world, I mean, surely we can put panels on the roof that can actually just use the sun's energy direct in through.
Welcome to Climate of Change, a five-part podcast series presented in partnership with Ulster Bank, featuring Northern Irish startups who are tackling the climate challenge. Today's episode is with Christine Boyle from Synergy, a Belfast-based business that's raised £1.7 million to bring the world's first nano-composite solar panels to market. Along the way, we'll hear why they started their business, what they've learned over the last 12 months, and how you and I can do our bit for planet Earth right here in Northern Ireland. Thanks so much for being here, and we really hope that you enjoy.
First memory was my first day at school I can kind of vividly remember. I was the youngest in the house and I was really dying to get to school because I'd kind of been at home with my mum and saw everyone else going out to school every morning, and I was just absolutely so ecstatic to get there. And then I can vividly remember her having me by the hand, walking down, you know, the primary one corridor that we all walk down.
Yeah.
And I remember opening the door and seeing the sandpit and I could just vividly all around me hear all of these other children crying and kind of distressed and stuff. And I was like, I am having that sandpit. And I just remember beeline for it, getting stuck in and looking all around me and being just so ecstatic and wondering why everyone else was upset.
So funny. So like, where did that mom. Like, I know your mum's like, all right, fine then, see you later. I'll see you at 2 o'clock, whatever it is. What was that desire to go to school? Was it just because you'd seen your other siblings go and you're like, here, this looks class, like, oh my word, I can't wait?
Now that you've mentioned it, it's kind of a wee bit when I get to a stage in life where like, okay, I've had it with this, I've done this, I need to move on. And it was, I had needed to move on for probably quite some months. And it was, yeah, when you get there, it's like, right, new stage, new learning, new knowledge, and I'm a happy person. That's really weird that I've said that.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is interesting kind of how like there's certain wee patterns that do repeat themselves, I suppose. I mean, the other thing I'd love to kind of touch on is talk to me about being a champion Irish dancer. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. Again, my three older siblings, my mother and father were obviously into Irish language, Irish culture, and they sent them all off to dancing, and none of them really kind of stuck with it. And they'd paid a fortune on these dresses and shoes and stuff like that. And in those days, it still is an expensive hobby, but it was expensive for people that didn't have a lot of money. And they were kind of like, right, well, we're not getting into that again. And then all of a sudden, I was like, well, I want to go. And went, no, you don't want to be doing that. They went to that, it cost us a fortune. And we went to all these fetishes on a Saturday. And it was, you know, I remember asking for, I think it was 12.5p. My pay was on a Saturday morning. And I used that myself and I went by myself. And I was the one then that went back and stuck and my dad and I became really, really close from that because we went everywhere together. So we spent an awful lot of time. He bought the Sunday papers and sat at the back of the hall, read every paper, and I came out with cups. It was great.
That's unbelievable. What did your folks do? Like business background or not business background?
So my daddy was a roofing. He had a roofing company, and that's where this all came from.
There you go. Brilliant.
So I suppose, yeah, we would have spent weekends together going round Ireland going to all the competitions. Then in the summer months, I would have jumped in the car with him in the morning and kind of went round the sites. And we would have talked about the jobs that he was doing and what they were and why he was doing them and who he was doing them for. So, yeah, I learned a lot.
Mm. Brilliant. So how do you then take that Saturday morning or that summer job experience with your dad into then like a career?
Genuinely, I didn't. So I think I was one of the females in the family. So almost all of the males in the family, whether it be my brother, cousins, nephews, uncles, all went to work in the company. It was kind of like, if you're male and we can find a job for you and this is what you'll do. There wasn't any jobs for the females. So my father was always very much, you'll get yourself an education, you'll find yourself a good man and you'll go off and do what women do. And genuinely in the beginning, it was never an option. So I did my degree at Queen's. I actually got a job in Ulster Bank.
Hi, look at that.
And I worked there for almost 13 years. And I learned a lot about business with, you know, clients that were coming in different industries, different sectors. all of the things that can go very well and very wrong with business. And I got a great training within Ulster Bank. And it was then my father was nearing retirement age and he was thinking, what is going to happen to the company now? And he kind of looked around all the men and thought, like, you're great on the site and you're great at what you do, but I don't know whether to be able to keep this company, you know, going. And we had a conversation absolutely out of the blue. And he kind of said, do you want to come into the business? And I suppose it was just what I could, I wasn't moving far enough, fast enough. And it was, and maybe he saw that as well. And I kind of thought, well, yeah. And I took a 2-year career break to give it a go and see how I would get on. And I just threw myself in at the deep end.
That's unbelievable. What was that? How did that change come about in him?
I mean, he was wise enough to know that the most important thing in a business is cash. Cash is king. And being able to negotiate lending and be able to hold a business together and to have a level head. I think he also wanted someone that he knew would look after the other members in the family and keep them in jobs.
Yeah.
And I suppose that was always the most forefront thing in his mind, was keeping things together, keeping people in jobs and keep food on families' tables.
So, I mean, 20 years in roofing, what was that like? You know, I'm sure it was all over the place, all over the country, learning a lot of things, very fast changing industry in some regards as well.
I mean, it was a complete roller coaster. When I went in at the very beginning, I knew absolutely nothing. And I think even the guys in the company were like, really, who's she? So for a long time, I kept my head down and just, you know, tried to learn as much as I could and not show any of the gaps that of the experience and expertise that I didn't have. And I suppose that was when I then reached out to female training and other females in business, because I became very lonely and I thought I need to find a route to help me get through, to help me learn without kind of disclosing that I wasn't as good as I thought I was.
So, I mean, how did climate change and this whole idea of like renewable energy make its way onto your radar? Because, you know, something that we've talked about with some of the other guys in the series is like, it really wasn't something that was on the agenda or that was pushed until quite recently, you know? So how did you, as quite an early adopter getting into that space, how did you get into that?
It was actually in the construction crash. We'd been doing really well. It was complete road. Well, initially in the early days, I was very tentative and grew the company slowly. And then we had the whole huge growth stage in construction. And then all of a sudden we went down like a lead balloon. And we were a subcontractor, so we just were on huge contracts that we didn't get paid for. And we were in a really bad position financially. We had tried to work our way out of it, took on extra lending and whatever, and then other companies went bust again and we never made our way out of it. And at that stage, I was kind of like, do I go back into financial services and banking, because I know how to do that, or do I take all the knowledge that I've gained through the roofing industry and try and see what will the roofing industry look like in 5 to 10 years, and do I still want to be a part of that? So that was a lot of meditating and a lot of soul searching and books and people, you know, who told their story and told how they had worked their way through challenges. And it was really around that visioning and thinking, what is the roofing industry going to be like in 5 to 10 years? And it was very obvious that buildings were going to be using their envelope, whether it be the roof or the cladding or even storage underneath, to generate their own energy. I knew with photovoltaics, PV, electricity, that we were already doing a fantastic job, and it was just a matter of scaling that. And we now have large PV farms generating huge amounts of electricity and feeding it into homes and buildings and offices. And I knew the big problem was heating and transport are really our big problems at the minute. But at that time, it was kind of, you know, when I would stand on the top of schools, offices, government buildings, and you would see, and I'm looking out the window today and just seeing exactly what I saw then, all of this sunshine hitting right onto the roof system. And yet what we did in the roofing industry was we put solar reflective paint on there to throw the solar radiation off. And that was quite an expensive item on a specification to actually throw the solar energy off the roof. And I kind of thought, why are we doing that? Why are we not taking all of that energy in heating it and bringing it into the heating system of the house. And then I kind of went into solar thermal in a big way and started researching it and looking at the reasons why. And the reasons why was because the products themselves were very expensive. They're made of glass, copper and aluminium, which are expensive materials to start with. Because they're heavy and bulky, they're expensive to manufacture. If you can imagine the factory that would be needed to actually bring together glass, copper and aluminium and make these panels. I mean, I knew on site from our guys that they didn't like installing them because they were just difficult and complicated. And then because they were expensive, the building owner wasn't really that enamoured with buying the technology. So I kind of saw in the whole route to market all of the things that were wrong, from the materials to the manufacturing to the installation to the accreditation to making the technology very easily understood for the customer. That's where digitalization comes in as well. But I kind of thought, if we got all of these things right, this is a fantastic technology and we should be using it. And thankfully, some people started listening to my idea and my concept. And I started working initially with Queen's University, the Aerospace and Engineering Department, and their Polymer Research Centre. And we did early proof of concept with them. And then we moved to Ulster University and built a demonstration. It's like a little tiny house on the prairie on top of the roof. And we had a demo platform there. And then I applied to Innovate UK, which is the UK's innovation organisation. And at that stage, I suppose clean tech was, in terms of their industrial strategy and what they were investing in, clean tech, very much like Ulster Bank, became the forefront. So I ticked a lot of boxes and we were able to manage in total to raise the 1.7 million. We're currently manufacturing our first panels. We have our living lab going up in Enniskillen in Northern Ireland. It's the first of there's 200 living labs. These are homes that people live in, and they put new technologies in to get them to understand what goes right, what goes wrong, and to make sure that those technologies, well, not just service those people now, but in 10 years' time, everything that we do, the two prime things that we think of constantly are cost and carbon. And our vision is that we reduce the cost of these technologies as much as we can to make them affordable for people going forward. And I mean, when you think of it, Matthew, if we can go out to the North Sea and get gas and oil and bring it in tankers and bring it right across the world for us to, you know, plug into pipes through into either our homes or our buildings, or I mean, surely we can put panels on the roof that can actually just use the sun's energy direct in through. So there has been a lot of obstacles put in the way of renewable technologies because the big incumbent industries were making an awful lot of money, and we as customers didn't care because, you know, when we turned on our light switch, it came on, and when we turned on our heating, we were warm. But I think people are now thinking, okay, it's going to be different, but it's right that we're choosing this different path, because, you know, the sun's energy is there for everyone. Sometimes it beggars belief that we've allowed it to happen. And I think when we, you know, when you kind of look at the charts of the different revolutions, Stone Age, Industrial Revolution and stuff, and I think when we look back, or we'll not be here, but when people look back, they'll go, see those ones of the 19th century and early 20th century? Like, seriously, what were they thinking? And I genuinely think that's what our generation's going to be labelled with, that we allowed this to happen, and we allowed it because people were making huge amounts of money, but it was destroying the planet. And when they look back and you've got, they've got their graphs and they're seeing that little, you know, between 1920, 30 to 2020, they're going to look back and go, and those people, just, what were they thinking? So yeah, we have a whole industry to sort out, but very timely opportunity.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, in terms of a timeline then, like, when did you start to really push this?
I suppose you just, with every new innovation, you just have to keep pushing it. And sometimes you get breakthrough and you get a little bit of help and support and it gets you to the next stage, and then you're kind of left lingering for another while. So you just constantly, and for a long time, it feels like you're pushing a ball up a mountain. Mm. And then all of a sudden you get this feeling. And I suppose it's like any new idea that anyone had. I mean, every movie shows it. the person that has an idea and no one listens to them, and then they get a breakthrough, and then they get a break back, and and eventually they get to the top of the hill, and everybody celebrates, and it was the right thing to do all along. And yeah, I suppose the feeling that I have now is that the UK government have just announced a pot of, is it £566 million through various local authorities to put new heating systems and new technologies into homes.
Wow.
And we just want to be in that supply chain. And we just see it as a huge opportunity. So this year is really very much about getting into the first living labs and demonstrating the technology, ramping up production, and hopefully getting serious investment to then be able to mass manufacture the product and get it out onto every home in the UK. And we're also virtually on programs with Department of Industry and Trade in India, New York and Brazil at the minute as well. So also looking at that global opportunity, Matthew, as well.
It's class. So talk to me a wee bit then about your technology. You know, if you could lay it out in layman's terms for me, like, what is the difference between traditional solar panel technology and this nanocomposite technology, which you guys are really innovating with?
Yeah, so instead of glass, copper and aluminium, we use polymers, plastics, for want of a better word. But they're advanced plastics, so they're actually plastics that behave like metals. So what we're able to do is we're able to, if you can imagine, we can just mass manufacture these plastic components and stack them up and get them out, and then they're put on almost like roofing slates, plug and played onto the roofing system. So because we can do that cheaper and lighter, it means that solar thermal energy or solar thermal technology would normally have just been used primarily in the summer months for around 60 to 70% of your hot water needs. And for that, I mean, even when I looked at the technology when I was doing my research, I thought that's not enough. I couldn't be bothered with that. Mm. You know, you either give me something that gives me all of my hot water needs all year round. Or I'm not particularly interested. And that's a long payback. And it was kind of people who were more committed to the green agenda that were uptaking the technology. So what we do is we allow us to cover the whole of the roof, and we do it much more economically. So that allows us to collect all of that energy. It allows us to bank it underground. So we actually store that energy, all of that excess energy in the summer months, and then we can heat pump that back into the building in the winter months.
Nice.
So we have an all year round 100% hot water and space heating. So we're heating into whether it be your radiators or your underfloor heating. And we're supplying that whole heating and hot water needs all year round. And we're doing it at a price, and we hope to prove this in our early demos and pilots, that will compete with the current price of gas and oil per kilowatt.
Mm.
So that's when we really become a game changer.
Absolutely. You talk about, you know, every Hollywood movie ever, and there's that, you know, hero's journey sort of moment where they step out and they're pursuing something new, and then they're faced with that break back, as you called it. What's been some of your breakbacks along this journey?
I think the gap between, and it's something that unfortunately we in Northern Ireland are probably suffering more from. So you get a momentum where you'll get proof of concept funding, and then you find out, oh, there's a pot of money for that next thing. But there could be 60, maybe 12 months between you applying for that, going through the whole process, and then actually getting it. So in between that, you're in this mindset of, am I doing the right thing? Oh God, you know, there's nobody paying me every month. You know, I could just go and get a job somewhere else and it would be grand. And so when you're in that mindset, and there's people say, so what are you doing? What's taking you a long time doing that? Are you still at that? You're in America and they're like, you're the greatest thing since sliced bread. I mean, this is just fantastic. So we have a lot to learn about startups and innovation and helping, and that trying to close that gap between and close the momentum and getting things there quicker. And I think probably in terms of clean tech, that's one of the really crucial things, because we don't have 20 or 30 years to get innovation out in this sector anymore.
Mm.
These things need to get into homes within the next 2025, we're not allowed to install gas in new homes anymore.
Wow.
So we need these solutions, and we don't have the time for those gaps in between. We have to build more momentum, and we have to accelerate. And the biggest way of accelerating in innovation is funding.
Mm-hmm.
So giving the right funding in and the right investment, and the right strategic investment for players who can accelerate that, who can help you. So it's not just money from funders, it's money from funders who've been there, done that, and have the t-shirt and know all of the mistakes that you're going to make and can avoid you making those. So hopefully we're with the right people doing the right thing, and it allows us to accelerate to market.
So, I mean, your investment journey so far, how have you been able to, you know, raise the 1.7 and retain so much of the company, and then just to tack something else onto that? You know, you mentioned you kind of have aspirations for larger form of investment. Do you have a figure in mind, or do you have a, like a path that you can see yourself going down to try to get that?
I've had a lot of help and expertise in this area. I think to date, genuinely, Matthew, I would say it has been luck, because there have been times when you're in that gap scenario where you're kind of like, okay, I don't know, I've applied for this £1 million fund, I don't know whether I'm going to get it. But there's people around you, and some will say, well, I can give you 40k for 20% of your company. Now, there was a time then I kind of went away, 40k, that'll get me 2 months, you know, it might be something.
Yeah.
And it was kind of, when I think back on it, a lot of it was, I was very lucky, because there was a time that I seriously would have considered, yeah, should I take that? Is it part of me that I don't take decisions quickly? Although there's a part of me needs to learn to do that more, I think. But yeah, I kind of maybe took time and took breath at those stages, and thank God I did, because there were times that I could have gone in and took small pots of money to get me a small bit along the way. It would have been a substantial chunk of my company. And because we have a big vision and we want to do the whole global export, mass production, licensing in different countries, we're going to need a huge amount of money. So we've still got 96% to play with.
Yeah, 100%. Something else that has kind of really struck me based on what you've said so far is I see the tension in my head of you pushing this idea up the hill, particularly with the context that you bring off, you know, the importance of cash flow, you know, you have that kind of even upbringing where that's very, very important to you, and that's sort of drilled into you. And then there is that kind of moment where you're just taking this leap of faith and you just feel like you're hanging there and you're like, is this going to work? Like, and you know, you've got friends and family around you who, well-meaning or not well-meaning, trying to like be like, are you okay? Like, are you doing the right thing? How do you persevere? How do you hold on in those sort of moments?
Well, you don't discuss it with those kind of people.
Very good.
So there's no point. They just don't, they won't get it. And you just kind of, they'll ask, how are things going or whatever? And I'll tell them little clippets. Yeah, you know, we're moving into our new office. We've got our new panel, or and leave it at that. Because, and I think that's the crucial thing of programs like the Accelerator and Ulster Bank. Because when you're there and you're with people, they get it. And those people, you can have genuine conversations, because they know exactly the type of person you are and what you're about and where you're at. But yeah, most people on the outside don't really understand the lunacy, as I say.
Absolutely. Well, how about like a mountaintop moment? Like, has there been a moment where you've had that breakthrough and you're at the top of the hill and you've got your arms up in the air like Rocky and you're like, yes, come on, finally a win here?
Do you know, Matthew, it's kind of really weird. It's like when you book a holiday and you plan it all and you get it all organised and it's all ahead of you, and then you get there. And do you ever get on a holiday and you're already thinking, where is my next holiday going to be?
All the time.
Because you're there and you're enjoying it. But
it's like the expectation of it is almost more enjoyable than the actual thing.
Yeah. And I suppose for me, what I've learned the most is enjoy the journey. I think that must have come from one of those books that I've read, but it was very, very poignant. And like, the journey is going to be a roller coaster. It just is. But I think it's a lot around building that balance of don't get too low when the lows hit, don't get too high when the highs, and understanding that. And I think that's what I've learned along the way, is that I've come through those highs and lows, and the future's not going to change just because you've got to this stage. That's still ahead of you. But it's learning to live with that and live with the roller coasters, highs and lows, but it's always going up.
Yeah, I heard something a few weeks ago, and it's something like, it never gets easier, you just get tougher.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. And I wouldn't say tougher, because, you know, I think you get more balanced is the word, because tougher means that you're fighting against it, and you shouldn't be fighting against it. You should be enjoying it. And I think we need to get to the stage where we'll allow more people to scale businesses and invent and do things, but enjoy it.
Absolutely. I think the last kind of question I have, and it's kind of the last little open tab in my head after hearing everything that you've shared, like, why are you doing this? Like, I always love to ask people that question. I know it's a bit of a stinker, or it's a bit tough, but it's like, you know, it is hard and it is a real roller coaster, and there's, you put yourself under immense pressure and, you know, you challenge yourself greatly. Like, why is it all worth it for you? Why are you dedicating this season of your life to pushing this forward and putting so much into it?
I love business, and when I'm doing this, I'm at my happiest.
Hmm.
So it's, you know, I could say, oh, I'm saving the planet and these panels are going to be the best things and whatever. Or I'm, you know, creating jobs for everybody and whatever else. But genuinely, it's where I'm best. I love doing it. I love what I do. And I love business. It's just, you know, where people love to cook or people love to nurse. It's just, this is where I was born to be.
Mm.
I think, it took me a while finding that, but I mean, I don't mind the long hours, and it's like everybody in every job. God, I listened to Tommy Tiernan last night, and he was interviewing a nurse, and, you know, in terms of what they've had to deal with. But they don't feel like that when they're in the midst of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't feel like that when I'm in the midst of what I'm doing.
Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing everything you did with us, and all the best going forward.
Matthew, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it and appreciate the opportunity. And thank you very much to Ulster Bank as well.
Climate of Change is a Best of Belfast production, made possible with support from Ulster Bank, who, as part of their efforts to lead the way in addressing the causes of climate change, have committed 25% of the places on their accelerator programme for climate-focused businesses. If you have a green business idea that could help save our planet, please click the link in the description of this episode to apply to the Ulster Bank Climate Accelerator before applications close on the 11th of June. Other than that, thanks so much for listening, and we hope you have a great rest of your day.